Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Tzadi Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 6 lines from the top. The Gemara opens with a quote from the Mishnah. It said, "V'ein yorshim shel ze, v'yorshin yorshov shel ze, v'yorshov shel ze, yorshin ksubasa." Once again, we're dealing with a woman whose husband had gone abroad, and word came to her through a witness, a singular witness, that he's dead. She went and married a second husband. The original fellow comes back, and we say that she has to leave both of them. And the details of the Mishnah we have already learned, and we're focusing on them in the during our previous year as well. So amongst the different details is that the heirs of the first husband and of the second husband, neither group inherits her ksuba. The Gemara asks, "Ksuba my avidita." What is the discussion concerning ksuba doing here in the first place, when we already said in the Reisha of the Mishnah that this woman does not deserve a ksuba? She doesn't receive a ksuba. Ksuba, of course, is the financial marriage guarantee that a woman receives upon getting married. That in the event she is divorced or widowed, she receives payment. But we've already said that this woman, who retroactively we see behaved wrongfully by marrying the second husband, basically a married woman entering marriage with a second man, so we already said she loses the ksuba. So what is the point of the Mishnah telling us that the heirs of both husbands, neither one, receives her ksuba? There was no ksuba due to this woman in the first place. The Gemara answers, "Omar Rav Papa, ksubas bonin dikrin." This is a special rabbinic institution that is featured extensively in Maseches Ksubas. In order to appreciate what ksubas bonin dikrin means, literally the ksuba of the male children, male sons, in order to appreciate that, the best way to approach it is simply by going through the Rashi, who gives us all the background, and eventually we'll hopefully understand what the Mishnah meant when it said that the heirs of both men do not receive her ksuba. So we look at the Rashi, in the upper part of the narrow lines, "Ksubas bonin dikrin, disnan b'ksubas," in Maseches Ksubas it says, "Ksubas bonin dikrin." Bonin dikrin dihavion lichi minoi. This is a text that's written into the ksuba. A man, upon marrying a woman, writes that the male children that we produce together, inun yarsin kesef ksubasech yeser al chukehon diim achuhon. This man who's marrying the woman, he may very well have children from a previous marriage, or he may marry another woman and have children from them. He tells the wife that he's marrying right now that the male children that we produce, they will be the beneficiaries of the property that that you bring into our marriage. That's a part of the ksuba, and we'll see mechanically how that operates as we go on. So the man guarantees this woman that the children that we have together, the sons that we have, they are going to inherit your ksuba as a separate unit of inheritance beyond my personal properties that are distributed equally amongst all of my children. V'im meisa b'chayav, if that woman dies in the husband's lifetime, Vinosa shnia, v'yolda lo. And then the man marries a second wife, and she has children. Umeshu. And then the husband dies. So at this point, you have a father of two sets of children that's dying. And the second wife, though, she remains alive. Bnei shnia afilu hein nekevos. The children of the second wife, even if they are females, notlin ksubas imon kechov gomor. They inherit their mother's ksuba as a basic debt to them. And that's what we call ikaradin. That's not a takona. That's not a rabbinic innovation. Sharei nis almino me'avihen. She, their mother, became a widow. And as becoming a widow, so the ksuba, the financial guarantees that are provided for that woman, are paid to her as a basic debt. And when she dies, her children they're inheriting their mother. Their father's already died. Their mother gets property. When she dies, her children inherit her. Uvenei Rishona, the children of the first wife. Im Yesh Zechorim, if there are males. Dichrin was the word in the Gemara. The dalet of that word, Dichrin, can be interchanged with a Zion, so you have Zechorim. So if there are male children from the first marriage, Noitlin Ksubas Imon, they will inherit their mother's Ksuba. Bear in mind, their mother died in their father's lifetime. V'afalgav demeso b'chayov, even though she died while the father was still alive. And at that point, by Torah law, the husband inherits the wife. Whatever properties she brought into the marriage and were written into the ksuba, the father inherits that. And when the father inherits properties, his properties eventually upon his death ought to be or should be distributed equally amongst all of his children. However, the Rabbonon Tikkun, the Rabbonon instituted Ksubas Bonin Dikrin, a special, we'll say a contingency, that though the father inherited this woman, their mother, we're talking about the children of the first wife, though the father, their father inherited the mother, the property that she had brought into the marriage and that he had assigned to her, the ksuba that was earmarked for her, they alone will inherit that. And why is that? Why is it so important that the specific children of that woman inherit the money that was assigned to her, that she brought into the marriage, and that was written into the ksuba? So that her father will be motivated to dedicate toward her marriage money as if it were his son. And what's the motivating factor? A father knowing that whatever he assigns to his daughter, when the Rashi makes reference, yitein levito kivno, a son inherits the father. That's standard Torah law. Daughters, when there are sons, daughters by Torah law don't inherit their father when in the presence of sons of their brothers. However, the rabbis want to motivate fathers to give to their daughters and upon their marriage. And what will motivate a man to do that is knowing that his properties will eventually land up not distributed amongst some other lady's children, but amongst his own grandchildren. That's Ksubas Bonin Dikrin. I hope it's not too complicated. If it sounds that way, so listen to this section again, go over the Rashi. However, we have to tie this issue into our story. V'hacha lo shakli yorshin dilok subas banin dikrin. In the case of the woman that was originally married properly to Mr. One, but he went abroad and a witness came and said that he died, she then went ahead and married Mr. Two, and the first husband shows up. We say that the children of this man will not receive the ksuba. V'hocha lo shakli yorshin dila ksubas banin dikrin elo b'nei haksheira notlin ksubas iman v'sha'ar cholkin b'shoveh. As far as the woman's ksubas banin dikrin, that is money that she that was guaranteed toward her ksuba, whether it be from the first husband or the second husband, the children that she has with those husbands respectively will not be inheriting her ksuba, other than the children that she had under kosher circumstances. In other words, before she married the second husband. However, any children that she has from the second husband, or possibly from the first husband that takes her back wrongfully after he returned, those children will not receive the ksuba that was assigned to their mother. And that's the intention of the Mishnah when it says that Ein Yorshin Shelzev, Ein Yorshin Shelzev, Yorshin Ksubasa. The Gemara continues, and we're reading at the end of the line in the Gemara, Pshita, is that not obvious? So the Gemara says, Mahu detema, I might have thought, the dida, the avda isura kansura banan. The woman herself that did something wrong, she married the second man when her first husband in fact was alive. So she did something wrong, so we understand all of the points of loss that she must experience as stated in the Mishnah. Lizara, lo kansura banan, but her children, they didn't do something wrong, so maybe they shouldn't lose out. Komash Malon, so that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah, that they too lose out. Ochiv Shelzeh, the Ochiv Shelzeh, Cholzin Velo Miyabmin. The two husbands that we featured in our Mishnah, upon their death, let us say they died, leaving no children. So then the issue of Yibum comes up. So the Gemara continues and says, Ochiv Shel Rishon, the brother of the first man. Now the first man was a legitimate husband. He didn't do anything wrong per se by the fact that he went abroad and inaccurate information concerning his death came up. In the meantime, she married a second man. But that marriage is a non-marriage. She shouldn't have married. She's a married woman to the first man. So when they, upon their death, and they leave brothers, choletz, the ochiv shel rishon choletz midoraisa. The need for chalitza there is a need on a Torah level. This was a legitimate husband that died leaving no children. So in order to release the widow from the yibum, binding, we expect chalitza to be done, and it's done. If it's done, it's done on a Torah level. The lo miyabim, the Mishnah taught there is chalitza but no yibum. That's midrabbanan. The rabbanan imposed a knas here, a restriction, a rabbinic restriction, not allowing her to marry the brother of her first husband. Ochiv shel sheni choletz midrabbanan, the brother of the second husband. We can technically call him the second husband, non-husband. So chalitza is required on a rabbinic level. The rabbis, even though it's not a real marriage, and his death leaving no children is of no real, is no Torah consequence to the widow. She's not really a widow of his anyway. However, the rabbis want chalitza to be done because in the minds of the public, people will think that the first husband actually divorced her and she was married to the second husband, and if they see her going free without chalitza, people will think that a yevama can marry outsiders without any formal release. So as to prevent that conclusion from being reached in the eyes of the public, we want chalitza to be done. However, the Mishnah says there's no yibum v'lo miyabein, as far as the marriage to the brother of the second husband, that lo, he doesn't, she doesn't marry him, lo midoraisa v'lo midorabanan, on neither level, not on a Torah level nor on a rabbinic level. Simply stated, she was never married to him, and therefore there's no need for any marriage to his surviving brother. Rabbi Yossi Oimer Ksubasa al Nichse Baila. There's a note that we have on the side where we, in effect, paraphrase the Mishnah on Pei Zayim Beis. At this point, one should be aware that there are three Tanoim that follow. You have Rabbi Yossi, who says a point, and then Rabbi Elazar, and then Rabbi Shimon. And we've noted their halachas on the side so that you don't have to turn back to Pei Zayim Beis. Rabbi Yossi says, Ksuboso al nichse bailo rishon, that she does receive a ksuba from the property of the first husband. Rabbi Elazar says, Horishon zakai b'mitziyosu v'maisi yodel v'aforos nidorel. According to Rabbi Elazar, the first husband is entitled to, yes, receive her found articles. If she finds things, he receives them. And income she produces, he should receive. And the first husband retains the right to annul her vows. And Reb Shimon, also in this spirit of things of emphasis on first husband, he says that Biosa o chalitzasa me achiv shel rishon poteres sorasa. The death with upon the death of the first husband, if no children were produced, so all the laws of yibum are in place, and intimacy on the part of her with his surviving brother or chalitza will release any other co-wives that that first husband may have had. Those are three halachas that we saw in the Mishnah, starting with Rabbi Yossi, followed by Rabbi Elazar, and who was followed then by Rabbi Shimon. The order is as important as we go on in the Gemara. But before we do so textually, let us glance under the Nosei Mivneh heading on the side. You'll notice a diamond. Take note of the fact that the diamond is, you see two kinds of diamonds, namely the tips are shaded in, but at opposite sides. And we also have a Roman numeral 1 and 2. This we highlight the names Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan in this Gemara, and we've noted on the side, Shnei Gishois, two approaches, Lagabi Gimel Deis Tanoim Shuskru B'Mishnah, regarding the opinions of three Tanoim mentioned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Haim Basroi Modu LeKamoi, O Kamoi Modu LeBasroi. Do the opinion, the earlier opinions, the let's put it this way, the Basroi, the later opinions, Rabbi Shimon is the latest of these opinions. Do the later opinions concede to the earlier opinions? Or do we say that the earlier opinions will concede to that which was stated by the later opinions? That might sound a little bit superficial or even vague, but as we go through the Gemara, hopefully this will become clear. But in the meantime, you can see we've laid out the groundwork. We pointed out the structure of the Gemara, the two approaches, Rav Huna, and then later Rav Yochanan, and the issue concerns the order of the opinions and their respective halachas. Do the later ones accept that which the earlier ones say, or do we say that the earlier ones accept that which the later ones say? So now, with that in mind, we go in the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, Basroi modu lekamoi, kamoi lo modu lebasroi. Basroi means the later ones concede, agree with the earlier ones. The earlier ones do not agree, do not accept the opinions of the later ones. And this is spelled out by the Gemara. We underlined the key names. Rabbi Shimon. Now, Rabbi Shimon was the last in the list of halachas that were taught. Rabbi Shimon modu le Rebbe Lozer. Rabbi Shimon will concede, will accept Rebbe Lozer's teaching. Dema bia de ikur isura loy konis. We take a look at Rashi. Rashi across from here, a couple lines down. Bia de ikur isura lo konis de kotani. It was taught in Mishnah that biasa kaina oisa liftor tsarasa. Bia, the act of intimacy, we can say, as we'll say, we say is the central problem, if you will. It's the most severe infraction that might be violated. And yet, Rabbi Shimon says that this woman is considered fully married, we'll say, to the first husband, is so far as that when he dies, she can have intimacy in the context of Yibum with his brother. So the Bia, which is the Iker, the main problem, and yet Rabbi Shimon doesn't impose any restrictions regarding Bia. He allows Bia with the surviving brother of that first husband, and it's so effective in that it will release from any Yibum bond, it will release any co-wives. So Bia, which is the main problem area, and yet Rabbi Shimon does not view it with any sense of restriction. And all the more so the topic that Rebbe Lozer had spoken about, which are monetary matters, which are less severe, all the more so Rabbi Shimon can accept that which Rebbe Lozer says, that the first husband, who Rabbi Shimon already viewed as a real, full-fledged husband, without any restrictions, he will certainly be able to receive any lost articles or have annulment rights regarding her vows. So Rabbi Shimon will easily accept Rabbi Lozer. However, Rabbi Lozer, lo modi leila Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Lozer was an earlier, in terms of order of appearance in the Mishnah, he was before Rabbi Shimon. And in the diamond, Rav Huna had said that the later accept the earlier, but the earlier do not accept the later. Rabbi Lozer is earlier than Rabbi Shimon in the order of the presentation in the Mishnah, so he doesn't accept Rabbi Shimon. Mitziaso maisi odeva de mamona hu, lost articles that the wife, that the woman finds, or income she produces, that's an area of financial concern. It's money matters. So there's no knas, there is no rabbinic intervention, no restriction on his, the first husband, benefiting from those things. Aval, bia de isura hu, but when you're dealing with an act of intimacy, which is not the realm, it's not in the realm of finances, it's in the realm of isur. Isur is the, we'll call the other area of halacha outside of money matters. Literally, isur is, it has to do with that which is prohibited, isur veheter, that which is permitted, outside the realm of monetary matters. A loose, maybe inaccurate translation would be areas of ritual law. Those areas are more severe, they're more restrictive, so that even though Rebbe Lozer shows some sign of, we'll say, leniency with regard to financial matters and it's their entitlement to the husband, when it comes to Bia, which is the realm of Isur hu konis, he imposes a restriction, and he will not allow Bia Yibum to take place between the woman and the surviving brother of that first husband. Vitravayu modu le Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Shimon, they were later opinions relative to Rabbi Yossi. They will accept Rabbi Yossi. Hani de Yasva to say lo konis. Matters concerned by that concerned Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Shimon were matters that apply to women that coexist with their husbands. The Asu say Limri are sitting under him, living under him. So those things which are part of an ongoing marriage, they do not impose any restriction. The Kolshi King Ksuba, all the more so the matters concerning Ksuba de la Mishkal Umepak Koi. Ksuba is paid upon the dissolution of the marriage, either through becoming a widow or being divorced, where they are separated from one another. So all the more so, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lozer, who regarding matters that will say part of the maintenance of a marriage, which we could say to you, could say you saw in the spirit of the Mishnah that this marriage, the marriage between her and the first husband is the continued marriage of that is not something that's viewed positively by all opinions. It's something that some opinions would prefer to see split apart, and yet they are willing to accept that first husband benefiting from these things. All the more so, the ksuba payment, which is a payment made upon the, as we say, the dissolution of the marriage, the separation, all the more so, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lozer will accept Rabbi Yossi's opinion that the ksuba is paid from the property of the first husband. However, Rabbi Yossi lo modi lahu. Rabbi Yossi will not accept their opinion. Ksuba de la mishkalu meipaku. The ksuba, which is a payment upon her, is paid for her to take and leave. So, de lo kunis. It's regarding that there is no knas. However, avolhani diaspa to say. But the other matters, the matters dealt with by Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Shimon, which are matters that would maintain a marriage, that are part of a maintained marriage, that Rabbi Yossi is not interested in the first husband benefiting from. And now we approach Rabbi Yochanan, who will present an opposite approach of that taken by Rav Huna. The Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Kamoi modu lebasroi. The earlier opinions will accept the later opinions. Basroi lo modu lekamoi, but the latter ones will not accept the earlier ones. Rabbi Yossi moidi le Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Yossi will accept that which Rabbi Lozer says. Ksuba. The ksuba which is paid from him, the man pays the woman, and we see no restriction. The kol shekein mitzioso maisiodeo, all the more so items that she finds or profit that she produces, the medida ledidei, all the more so items that or matters that go from her to him. Just to add another level of understanding or explanation to that, Rabbi Yossi, who mentioned that she gets from him the ksuba, he didn't do anything wrong. She is the one that did something wrong. She married a second man. Okay, when the first husband comes back, so she's got to leave the second fellow, and yet we see that the first man is paying her a ksuba. She will receive a ksuba from him. When the Gemara said all the more so, things she finds, she is someone that did something wrong. So you have someone that did something wrong that is going to benefit from him. All the more so the husband, the first husband that did nothing wrong, all the more so he has rights to benefit from her. Rabbi Lozer, though, lo modile. Rabbi Lozer does not accept Rabbi Yossi. And here is an example of, as Rabbi Yochanan said, that the latter ones do not accept the earlier ones. Rabbi Elazar, who appeared later, he doesn't accept Rabbi Yossi. Mitzi Yosu Maisi Odahu de Medidoladi De Lokonis. I understand that things that she produces, or the items she finds, or profits that she produces, that goes from her to him. Avok Suba de Medide Ladida Konis. But the ksuba which is paid by the first husband to her, that she should lose. She did something wrong. She married that second husband illegally. Utravaihu modu le Rabbi Shimon. Both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Elazar will agree to Rabbi Shimon. Uma hani deme chayim lo kansi. The cases of Metzia and the Ksuba, those are matters that concern the husband while he is alive. And we see no restriction. Bia, the act of Yibum de Lachar Misa, where the first husband is no longer around, Lo Kol Shekein, certainly can be performed. So that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar, who when he's alive, we still see these normal elements of marriage operating. So when he's dead and there's a question of Yibum, all the more so. Rabbi Shimon lo modi lehu. Rabbi Shimon, though, who said that the brother of the first husband functions in a Yibum capacity, he doesn't accept the teachings of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar. Bia hu de lachar miso lo konis. Bia, which is after the death of the first husband. So there, we don't impose any restrictions. Avol hani de mechayim, but the matters that concern the first husband, which we know that she's not allowed to go back to be married to the first husband. She's not allowed to go back to her family life with the first husband. So matters that concern the living individual, Konis, there he imposes a restriction. The Gemara continues with a quote from the Mishnah im Niseis Shelo Birshus. The Mishnah had mentioned that if she married without the Rishus of Beis Din, but rather based on the testimony of two witnesses that said the husband was dead, she, upon the husband's return, she can go back to him. Now, we want to emphasize, and it's extremely important to emphasize this, that this section, this point in the Mishnah, was taught by Rabbi Shimon. So when you look at the Mishnah, this was basic on Pei Zayim and Beis. Rabbi Shimon had said what we just quoted in the previous sugya, Biyoso Chalitos Ol Chalitosa Meach Shurishim Pateres Terosa V'Navlad Mimenu Mamzer. And then he goes on to say V'im Nise Shelo Bershus, and if she married the second husband without the ruling of Basin, but because two witnesses said that the first husband died, Muteres Lachzer Lo. That is the that's what Rabbi Shimon teaches in the Mishnah. So we have a halacha that, once again, if the woman's marriage to the second husband was as a result of the testimony of two witnesses, which we know is a very, very strong institution in halacha, there's nothing stronger than the testimony of two witnesses. So under those circumstances, she's considered anusa. These are circumstances that the circumstances that led to her husband to the marriage, second husband, were beyond her control. What more could she have done than rely on the testimony of two witnesses? So when the first husband comes back, she can go back to the first husband, because her behavior was an oinus, and an oinus, a woman who has intimacy under oinus circumstances beyond her control, does not render her forbidden to her first husband. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the side under the Nosei. We've noted Rav. Rav appears in a fire box. He's a central name for a long discussion in the Gemara. Rav Poisek Kemishnah Seinu. Rav issues a halachic ruling saying that we should follow our Mishnah. Be'oimro, through saying Hochi Hilchasoi, says that the halacha is like our Mishnah. Namely, Isha Shenises L'Sheni Al Pishnei Edim Muteres Lafsu L'Rishon. A woman who married a second man based on the testimony of two witnesses, she can go back to the first husband when he reappears. Bahim Sheikh, in the continuation of the Gemara later, Misoirer Tamias Rabbi Sheshes Midivrei Rav Nishma, in order to say, from Rav Sheshes will be aroused to an exclamation, because from Rav, it sounds Sheyesh Cholkim. When you say that the halacha is like such and such, that terminology indicates that someone holds otherwise, and it's necessary for me to state the halacha is like A as opposed to B. So from the terminology that Rav used, it seems that there's someone that would disagree with the teaching of Reb Shimon. Rav Sheshes' feeling is that everyone agrees she can go back to the first husband. So the question that the Gemara will deal with is, why does Rav express himself in such a way that leads us to think that there are others that disagree? The Gemara. Omar Rav Huna Omar Rav Ochi Hilchasa. So Rav Huna quotes Rav saying that thusly is the halacha, that she can go back to the first husband. Omar Le Rav Nachman. And here we have a long question. Ganvo Genuvi Lomaloch. The terms Ganva Genuvi literally would mean something that's done through thievery. What is Rav Nachman's intention by something that was stolen over here is the Rav Nachman's claim that Rav Huna is saying something without giving accurate sources for what he's saying. So let's continue. Is Viro Loch Kerebi Shimon, if you hold like Rabbi Shimon, then Emo Halacha Rabbi Shimon. Then say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, the Shmaitzech, Rabbi Shimon Kozim, because your teaching is in effect, following Rabbi Shimon. We pointed out before that the when the Mishnah says Nisei Shelo Birshus Muteres Lachzor Lo, and then you come and say that's the halacha, why not say that's the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? The Chitema, you might say, what caused Rav to avoid saying that? You might say, "I amino aloha Rabbi Shimon." If I would have said aloha b'alos Rabbi Shimon, mashma afilu b'kamaisa, it would imply that that Rav would accept Rabbi Shimon even in the earlier halacha, namely the halacha concerning the yibum, that the bia of the chalitza with the surviving brother is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of yibum, and it would exempt would free the co-wife from the Yibum bond, and Rav doesn't accept that. So Rav could have said Halacha Kerebi Shimon Bachrona. Why didn't Rav say it that way, that we follow Rabbi Shimon regarding his latter point, namely the heter of going back to the first husband? Kashia. So this remains a point of difficulty. Omar Rav Sheshes. Note that Rav Sheshes is going to raise his question. It's a long question. Omar Rav Sheshes. Amino kinayim v'shochiv Rav omro leho shmaitza. I figure that Rav was dozing off. Nayim v'shachiv means a little bit awake and a little bit of a slumber. That he was dozing off when he said what he did. Halacha, michlal pligi. The term that Rav used was, he said, Hochi hilchasa. By saying it that way, you're implying that there are those that would argue on Reb Shimon in the case of the woman who married based on the test, who married the second man based on the testimony of two witnesses. My havalola mevad. What could she have possibly done? She was relying on two witnesses, Manus Ansa. She was an Anusa. It was beyond her control. Namely, her marriage to the second husband was due to the testimony of two witnesses. What else could she have done? Again, the testimony of two witnesses is viewed with extreme seriousness in the eyes of halacha. It's a very strong source of reliability, a source of truth, possibly. So, when you're dealing with a woman who entered the marriage with a second husband under oines circumstances, of course, when the first husband comes back, she's entitled to return to him. V'yoy tanya, and furthermore, we have a Tanaic source that will indicate that the Rabbonan agree with Rabbi Shimon. There's no machloikes. What does the source say? Kol arayas shomru ein srichois heimenu get. When you're dealing with forbidden relations, so the man and woman are to separate from one another, split up, and there's no need for a divorce document. Chutz mi eishes ish and nises al pi beizin, with the exception of a married woman marrying another man, which is an example of arayas, forbidden relations, who married the second man based on the court ruling, which for us means based on the testimony of one witness, where the court had sanctioned what he said and she relied on that. So there, a divorce document is necessary. So we continue with an inference. Al pi beizdin hu de baya gita. Al pi edim lo baya gita. Al pi edim means through the testimony of two witnesses, she doesn't need a get from that man, from the second husband. Her relations with him was under oines circumstances, and of course she can go back to the first husband. Money. Who would author this source? The source, of course, with its inference. Ilemo Rabbi Shimon. I'll be based in me by a get. If we're taught according to Rabbi Shimon, a woman who married the second husband based on the testimony of a singular witness, does Reb Shimon expect a get from the second husband releasing her? Not at all. No get is required. And the Gemara points this out. V'hotanya, we have a source in which Reb Shimon will indicate that. Rabbi Shimon Omer Asu Beisdin Behoraasan Kizadain Ish Beisha. A marriage through the ruling of Beisdin, which is a ruling based on the testimony of a singular witness claiming the first husband died, that's viewed as Zadain Ish Beisha, a deliberate cohabitation between a man and a woman married to another man, an act of adultery. So that Rabbi Shimon views. So what happens in a case of adultery? So the woman leaves the first husband without the second husband, the adulterer. She leaves him without any need for a get. So Rabbi Shimon declares that the case of the Hayras based in, based on the Eid Echad, is a total separation without any need for a get. Al pi Edim, a woman who married a second man based on the testimony of two witnesses, Kishigigas Ish Beisha. That's viewed as an intimacy under mistaken circumstances, and she's allowed to go back to her first husband. So, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, the Hiras, the woman who married a second man based on the testimony of one witness, so she becomes forbidden to her first husband. But what's important to note here, that is ed v'ed lo baya get. Both cases, as far as Rabbi Shimon are concerned, do not require a divorce document. So we have both cases, according to Rabbi Shimon, don't need a divorce document. We had source, the source that's labeled above, source with the diamond number one. In that source, there was an inference made, a distinction drawn between the Alpi Beisdin versus the Alpi Edim. In this source, you've got the Alpi Beisdin and the Alpi Edim with no distinction made. So it can't be according to, so that the source number one cannot be in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. El Olav Rabbonon Hi. So rather, source which we labeled with diamond number one, that source is authored by the Rabbonon. And it says in that source that if she married Alpi Edim, if she married the second husband based on the testimony of two witnesses, she doesn't need a get from the second husband. She's an anusa. And as an anusa, she is allowed to go back to her first husband. And who's saying that? The Rabbanan. Not only Rabbi Shimon, the Rabbanan as well. So, and this brings us to the end of Rav Sheshis' question. The point mentioned that if she's Nisei Shelo Brishus, she got married without the without basin, but rather through the testimony of two witnesses, she can go back to her first husband. This is a universally accepted point. And hence, there was no need for Rav to express himself using the term Hochi Hilchisa. That's Rav Sheshis' question. Just to repeat the main nugget of the question, by saying Hochi Hilchisa, you're indicating that you're ruling like one over, like A over B, or you're ruling like Mr. X over Mr. Y. But in this case, your ruling is something that's universally accepted. We continue in the Gemara. You'll notice that we have a marking scheme over here, and the triangles. The triangles that appear here are answers to express why there was a need for Rav to say Hochi Hilchisa. We see these triangles. By the way, they continue at the top of Amud Beis. The Gemara continues. Li'olam Rabbi Shimon Hi. The source that we labeled source number one is in fact not the Rabbanan. It is according to Rabbi Shimon. By having assumed, as Rav Sheshis did in his question, that it was according, that source number one was according to the Rabbanan. So then the point mentioned there, the inference point that Alpi Edim lo baya get, and she's an anusa, she could go back to her first husband, the assumption Rav Sheshis made that was authored by the Rabbanan, making that a universally accepted point. However, source number one, according to this approach, triangle number one, is not according to the Rabbanan. It is a source taught by Rabbi Shimon. Now, if it's taught by Rabbi Shimon, how can then there be a distinction between the two cases of Alpi Beisdin versus Alpi Edim? So the Gemara says, Utritz Hochi, and restate source number two thusly. And through restating source number two, we will then be able to discover how source number one is according to Rabbi Shimon. What does it say? What's the restatement of source number two? Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Asu Beisdin Behoira Asan, Kikavonas Ish Beisha, Ubaya Get. The ruling of Beisdin allowing a woman, based on the testimony of one witness, to marry a second man is like a man and woman that got married intentionally. Kikavonas ish beisha means as a is viewed as a regular marriage, and a regular marriage necessitates a get in order to disband it. The continuation of this of restated sources, al pi edim, kishelo bekavonas ish beisha, velo by a get. If a marriage to a second husband based on testimony of two witnesses saying that the first husband was dead, that's and then of course the first husband shows up, that is a non-marriage. It's like a man and woman that that experience intimacy without marital intentions, and no get is required. So that the when we read source number two, in which Rabbi Shimon appeared, source number two in fact then is not equating the two cases. Memela, therefore, source number one, in which we made a distinction, again, non-equation of cases, is according to Rabbi Shimon, and not according to the Rabbanan. And therefore, source number one, which is only according to Rabbi Shimon, it is it's in effect a statement of Rabbi Shimon. It comes out then that only according to Rabbi Shimon do we see that a woman who married al pi edim is considered anusa and allowed to go back to her first husband. Well, that having been said, then, that it's a Rabbi Shimon opinion, I need Rav to say that thusly is the halacha, because it's only a Rabbi Shimon opinion, not that which is universally accepted. We continue in the Gemara. Approach number two, Rav Ashi Omar. Le'inyan Isura Katani Vehachi Ka'omar. Source number two, in which Rabbi Shimon appeared, is talking about the realm of Isur. If we look in Rashi, toward the end of the Rashi commentary, Le'inyan Isura, Uli Oilom Kidikosalka Daitoch Meikora. According to Rav Ashi, we are going to read the source as we originally understood it when Rav Sheshes was presenting his question, not as the first triangle did, which reread the source. Instead of Kizodoin Ishbisha, it had reread it as Kikavonas Ishbisha. No, Rav Ashi maintains the original presentation of Rabbi Shimon as Rav Sheshes stated. Namely, Kizodoin ish b'yeshes ish. Umihu linyan get lo komairi. However, regarding the need for a get, that wasn't the agenda of that source, the source that we labeled with the diamond number two above. The afagav demedami lo lezodoin. Even though we are comparing the woman who remarried based on the eight echad to a willingful act of adultery, nevertheless, by a get. Whereas in a case of adultery, no get is required. In the case of the marriage to the second husband through the testimony of one witness, so there Rabbi Shimon will require a get. So now we read in the Gemara, we said Rav Ashi says le'inyan isura katani v'hochi ko'omar. The source in which Rabbi Shimon's name appeared, which was featured as diamond number two, is talking about the realm of prohibition. Asu beis din b'hira'asan, a marriage to a second husband through the upon relying on the testimony of one witness is kizadon ish beisha umitzura abayla. She becomes forbidden to her first husband, just like an act of adultery is something that when a married woman has relations with a with another man, she becomes also to her husband as well as to the paramour. So too in the case of the woman who married based on the testimony of one witness saying that the original husband was dead, she too is also to her husband. However, a get will be required. Al pi edim, however, in contrast, you have a woman who married a second man on the testimony of two witnesses. Kishigigas ish beisha v'lo mitzra abayla. That's like a an unwitting case of a man with married woman, which does not result in her being prohibited to her husband. So once again, as far as using source number 2 as Rav Sheshes did to show how source number 1 would have been authored by the Rabbanon and not by Rabbi Shimon, so Rav Ashi is undoing that. And therefore source number 1 in which we drew the distinction, namely Al-Pi Beis Din, there is a get requirement, that in fact is a position taken by Rabbi Shimon. And hence, it was necessary for Rav to say the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, because source number 1 did not reflect the opinion of the Rabbanon. We continue at the top of Omid Beis with a third approach, Ravina Omar, Le'inyan Korban Katani, V'hachi Ka'omar. The source that we in which Rabbi Shimon appeared, that we labeled diamond number 2, is referring to the topic of sacrifices. And V'hachi Ka'omar, Osu Beisdin Bahurasan Kizodon Ish Beisha V'lo Masya Korban. Sacrifices are brought for atonement when sins are done in an unwitting fashion, not when they're done knowingly. So the approach of Rabbi Shimon to the woman who married a second man based on the testimony of one witness, which was a result or through the based in accepting it, that's viewed in the eyes of halacha as a willing act of adultery, and there's no korban to be brought. However, al pi edim, if a woman married a second husband because two witnesses said that the fellow was dead, and then he shows up, kishigigas ish beisha umasya korban, then it's viewed as a mistaken adulterous relationship, unwitting, and that is grounds for bringing a korban. So once again, the source in which Rabbi Shimon made mention of the based in versus the Edim, the distinction there was with regard to one case brings a sacrifice and the other case does not bring a sacrifice. However, to use that statement of Rabbi Shimon to conclude that both cases do not need a get, that is not true. And therefore, as we said before, source number 1 in which a distinction was made, Al-Pi Beis Din requiring a get and Al-Pi Edim not requiring a get, that in fact is something that Rabbi Shimon would say. And since it's only Rabbi Shimon, the comment made there that Al-Pi Edim lo baya gita, because she's like an anusa and therefore muta to go back to her first husband, that's something that Rabbi Shimon said. And because of that, it was important for Rav to say Hachi Hilchasa, to state the halachas like this over other opinions that would disagree. The Iboyasema, another approach, Ha Kamaisa Rabbonanhi. In fact, we're going to go back and say that the source that we indicated with diamond number 1 is authored by the Rabbonan. Utritz Hachi, and restate it as follows. Now that source had said that Kol Arayis Shomru Ein Tzriches Hemenu Get, and the continuation would be Chutz Me'eshes Ish V'Shenises Al Pi Beis Din, with the exception of those cases that a get will be required, and the case of Me'eshes Ish, Rashi points out, that's the case where she remarried based on the testimony of two witnesses, as well as the case of the woman remarrying based on the testimony of one witness. In both cases, a get is required. And with that in mind, since a get is required, Rashi points out, a get from the first husband is also required. That shows us that she was in effect viewed as, let me just go restate that. A get is required not only from the first husband, from the second husband as well. So from the fact that the get was required from the second husband as well, that indicates to us that was it's viewed by the Rabbanon as a serious type marriage, and therefore she will become usher to the first husband. And once again, I want to emphasize here, according to this rereading, even a case where she married based on the testimony of two witnesses, we don't say according to the Rabbanon it's viewed as simply as an act of oinus, but it's a real marriage, and as such she needs a get from him, and she will then a woman who was married by Mr. One and then married number two, she can't go back to being with Mr. One. So she's also on both. It's only Rabbi Shimon then that says Muteres Lachzor L'Rishon, and hence it was important for Rav to spell out Hachi Hilchasa. We continue with a very significant question in the Gemara. At this point we can say that we had four answers, four approaches to, we'll say, deflect Rav Sheshis' question of why was it necessary for Rav to say Hachi Hilchasan. Rav Sheshis constructed his question based on certain assumptions regarding Bryce's Tanaic sources that we saw quoted in the Gemara. The four answers basically, let's say, reevaluated those assumptions, making it necessary for Rav to rule like Rabbi Shimon, like Rabbi Shimon's halacha. Here, the Gemara raises a question based on, let's say, the svara that we mentioned earlier as to why is it that when she marries the second husband, based on the testimony of two witnesses, we allow her, we'll say Rabbi Shimon allows her to go back to the first husband. And what was the svara there? The svara was, my havel olam evad, what else could she have done? Therefore, since she had nothing else that she could have done, we say it was an act of oines, something beyond her control. And when you have a married woman with another man under oines circumstances, we allow her to go back to her husband. On the side of the Gemara under our no-sour topic heading, we're introducing the Gemara. Li'el omarnu dimniseis al pishnayim. She'omru meis, if she got married based on the testimony of two witnesses that said the husband died, the chozar baila, and the husband came back, muteres lachzor lo, she can go back to the first husband, but taina demai havel olam evad, with the claim, what else could she have done? We're going to see a series of diamonds, and under our mivne heading, this introduces a sidra. The diamonds represent a sidra, a series shel makoros, kushios, series of sources that actually are questions, shemalamdim lechora, that teach apparently, the lo amrinon mai havalolam evad. Well, a whole list of situations where we don't introduce that claim, that explanation, that justification, namely of my havelolam evad. But we do require something else. And if that be the case, if we are successful in deflecting or disarming this hezber of my havelolam evad, then we'll be hard pressed to understand why is it that a woman who married based on the testimony of two witnesses, why would Rav Shimon say she can go back to the first husband? So now the Gemara, Mosiv Ula, Mi Amrinon Mai Havelo Lemevad. Is that really a claim? Is that a justification? V'hotnan. We have a Tanaic source that deals with the writing of a get, of a divorce document. There are quite a few details in the writing of a divorce document, and if there is any deviation from the requirements, the document, the get, will be considered void, because ineffective. So this source mentions that when you write a get, you have to date it, and you date it according to a certain, let's say, starting point, a certain frame of reference. Often, the frame of reference was the year of that particular king's reign. Say that this get is being written in the third year of so-and-so's reign. That would be just an example. So if you have a get that is, we'll say, misdated in those terms, Kosav L'Shein Malchus Sheina Hagenes. If a person wrote a divorce document that he should have been dating in terms of a Jewish king, and he wrote it in the name, he dated it in terms of the Roman Empire, or L'Shein Malchus Modai, L'Shein Malchus Yavon, or in the using the Median, the Mede monarchy, or the Greek monarchy, Lavinian Habayas, Lechurban Habayas, or the number of years since the building of the Holy Temple, or the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Hoya B'Mizrach V'Kosa B'Marov, if he was located in the east and he indicates that he's writing this get while he's in the west, or B'Marov V'Kosa B'Mizrach. Again, all of these are examples of inaccuracies. Teitse Mizeh U'Mizeh. If she married a second husband with this type of divorce document, she must leave both. She's not allowed to be married to either men, not the first husband nor the second husband. V'chol hadrochim ho'elu bo, and all of the financial losses, etc., that were featured in our Mishnah apply to this woman. V'amai, why should this woman lose out so much? Lemo my havelo lemevad. Why not simply claim that she married the second man under onus circumstances? What else could she have done? She thought that it was a kosher divorce document. So, as such, why should she be penalized so much? The Gemara answers that here you can't say my havelomavim. What could she have done? Because she had what to do and didn't do it. A by law la kruye legita. She should have read the divorce document certainly before marrying a second man. Rashi says la kruye legita lefnei chacham, in front of someone who's knowledgeable and would have pointed out the mistake in the divorce document. And since she didn't do that, she went ahead and married a second man anyway, she deserves to lose everything that she does. That's not like the case of a woman who heard the testimony of two witnesses indicating that her husband was dead. What more could she have done, and hence married the second man? Omar Rav Simi Bar Ashi Toshma. We're introducing another source which will be a challenge to strengthen Ula's question. Hakoine says Yevimto, Vaholcha, Sorosa, Venises. A man, a surviving brother, married his sister-in-law. through that marriage, the dead brother who had other wives, the other co-wives, the Tzara, as they are known, she went and married someone else. She married Lashuk. That's V'hocha Tzoras of Anise. She married outside, which is standard procedure when Yibum is done with one of the surviving, one of the widows, the other co-wives are released to marry whomever they want. So that's what happened. V'nimseis zu Ilinus. And the Yavama, the one that was chosen to do Yibum, turned out to be an Ilinus, a woman incapable of procreation. Teitse mizeh umizeh. The Tzora that married out in the meantime, she must leave her husband, and she cannot be with the Yavam either. V'chol hadrachim elubon, she loses out on all the benefits that we had indicated in our Mishnah. Now, the reason for the Tzora having to separated from her husband is simply she shouldn't have married out, because the mitzvah of Yibum has not been accomplished. And why is that? Because the Yavama, the widow that was married, turned out to be an Ilinus. And an Ilinus does not fulfill Yibum requirements. But now we ask, V'amai, why does the Tzora who married Lashuk have to lose out? She has to leave the second husband, and she can't go to the Yavam and everything, and loses all the financial benefits. Why? Ne'emar mai hava lo lemevad. We ask, what could she have done? She saw one of the co-wives marrying the surviving brother. That was the green light for her to marry someone else. The Gemara answers, there was what for her to do? Ibaya lo lemtuni. She should have waited. She shouldn't have, the co-wife, the Tzora, shouldn't have married out. She should have waited to see if this Yavama is going to develop into an Ilinus or not. So there was something for her to do. And she didn't do it. She didn't wait. Therefore, she loses out. Not so in the case of our topic of the woman who married based on the testimony of two witnesses saying that her first husband was dead. Omar Abaye, Ta Shema. Again, a source that will call into question the excuse of Mai Hava Lo Lemevad. Kol Arayas Shomru Potros Tzorosehem. This is, of course, from the beginning of our Masechta. If we just keep a simple illustration, because maybe it's been a long time since we've discussed this, you have Reuven and Shimon are brothers. And Reuven married Shimon's daughter. Reuven was married also to another wife. There were two wives. But Reuven died, leaving no children. The surviving brother is the father of one of Reuven's wives. She is an erva. She is a forbidden relationship. A father does not marry his daughter. As a result of the daughter being one of the Yevamis, the co-wife is exempted as well. Just like a daughter is exempted, the co-wife is as well. That's kol arayas. All forbidden relations exempt the co-wives. Holchut soros v'nisu. The co-wives, seeing that they're not bound at all, went ahead and married out. They married whoever they wanted. V'nimsu elu ilinus. And then it turned out that the tzora, using our example, Shimon's daughter that had been married to Reuven turns out to be an Ilinus. She develops physiologically in such a way that she's clearly not capable of reproduction, not maturing properly. She is an Ilinus. Oh, so if she's an Ilinus, the Mishnah says, Teitse mizeh mizeh, the Tzoros in the meantime that had married out are to leave their husbands, and they do not, none of them will do Yibum. V'chol adrachim elubo, and all the financial losses that we had seen in our mission apply here as well. Now the we have to add a little explanation, and that is when Shimon's daughter that was married to Rimi turns out to be an islandess, we categorize that marriage as a mekachtos, as a mistaken, a marriage on mistaken grounds. A person, unless otherwise stated, a person expects to marry a woman that is not an islandess, that's capable of procreation. So a man who marries a woman like that and it turns out that she's an islandess is considered a mekachtos, and therefore she, the daughter of Shimon, who is that, was never really married to Reuven, and the co-wives are not co-wives of an Erevah. And if they're not co-wives of an Erevah, they're simple widows of Reuven, they should have done Yibum. Now, here in this case, we're describing the Erevah turning out to be an idleness. Therefore, the co-wives shouldn't have married out. And it says in the source that they all lose out. When they do marry out, they have to leave their husbands, and they lose out on all their financial benefits. V'amai, why is that so? Neimo amai havelo lemevad. Couldn't you say here what we said with the case of the woman who married based on the testimony of two witnesses? What else could she have done? These tsoros married out thinking at the time that they were tsoros erva. Answer: Eboya law lemtune. They should have waited. They shouldn't have married out so quickly. They should have waited to see, in our case, how Shimon's daughter, who is now a widow, how she would develop physiologically. Now, they didn't wait. Had they waited and seen that she's an islandess, they would have realized that they are still candidates for Yibum and should not have married out. So, in that case, it's not a situation of what could they have done. They could have done something and didn't do it. That's why they have to lose out. Omar Rova, Toshma. We cite a source involving the writing of a get. We're also going to make reference to a receipt. A receipt is something that a woman will give the husband that divorced her upon his paying her the ksuba. Kosav Sofer Get Leish V'Shover Leisha. A scribe was preparing a divorce document for a man and a receipt for the wife. V'Tah, a mistake happened. V'Nosan Get Leisha V'Shover Leisha, and the scribe delivered the divorce document in an envelope to the woman and the receipt to the man. And then the day of divorce came about. V'nosnu zeh lozeh v'zeh lozeh. And the get was given by the woman to the man, which is something that Jewish law, of course, doesn't accept. So it was the woman giving a divorce document to the man, and the man was giving a receipt to the woman, which obviously makes no sense. The woman is the one who receives the payment, and therefore she gives a receipt to the man. So there was this switch around that took place, and then the woman went ahead and married another man, thinking that she was divorced. Uliachar zman hare aget yoytze mitachas yideo ish v'shoyver mitachas yideo isha. And after a while, it's discovered that the man is holding on to the get. In other words, the husband never did the act of giving a get to the wife. In fact, the scribe gave it to her. That's of no meaning. A husband has to give the divorce document to the wife. And that never happened. And the shover turned out to be in the possession of the woman. A shover is supposed to be in the hands of the husband. So it turns out that the woman was never divorced. Teitse mizeh mizeh, v'chol hadrochim ho'elu ba. Here's a woman that now has to leave her second husband and is usher to the first husband, and all the losses that the Mishnah accounted for apply here as well. Ve'amai, why should she lose out so much? Neimo, why not say ma havelo lemevad? But what could she have done? She thought that she was receiving a divorce document from her husband, and a woman who gets divorced is certainly allowed to marry anyone she wants, and certainly not to suffer all of this loss. There is something she could have done and didn't do it. Ibaya law, la kruye legita. Before marrying out, she should have read the document that she received from her husband. And had she done that, she would have seen that she's reading a receipt. She's not reading a divorce document. Namely, she never received a divorce. Now, she didn't do that. So she acted negligently. And therefore, she loses out. Not so in the case of the woman who remarried based on the testimony of two witnesses. Omar Ravashi, Toshma. Again, we continue with divorce document issues. Shino Shmoi Ushma, Shem Iro V'Shem Ira. A scribe recorded the names of the couple inaccurately, changed the name of the man, changed the name of the woman, or the cities in which they live, which is information that's necessary to include in a divorce document, but it was recorded inaccurately. And then she went ahead receiving this kind of document, this divorce document, and married out. She married someone else. But she's not considered divorced because of these inaccuracies. Teitzei mizeh umizeh, v'chol hadrochim o'elu ba. She is forbidden to remain with the second husband. She's not considered divorced. She can't go back to the first husband. And all of the losses that we've mentioned till now apply to this woman. V'amai, why should she lose out? Neimo maya v'lo l'meva. Why not use the same excuse? What else could she have done? Answer, not surprisingly, before marrying a second man, she should have read the document. She would have discovered that the name that appears in there is not her name. And she would thereby have realized that she's not divorced. But she didn't do so. So she was negligent. And therefore, she deserves to lose out, as we explained. Omar Ravino Toshma. Let's try to show how the excuse of my havalol mevad is not a sufficient excuse from the following case. Konsa beget kireach. Now, the term get kireach is a reference to a very special kind of divorce document that was prepared improperly. There's something called a get mekusher. That involves a divorce document that the text is written on one side and witnesses sign on the opposite side. And the witness signing on the opposite side, line by line, must correspond to the writing of the text on the first side. If a line of witnesses is skipped, that is called a get kereach. It's an improper divorce document. Of course, the details of a get kereach are discussed extensively in Maseches Gittin. But a man married a woman based on her having received a get kereach. As we say, that's an inaccurate or an improper, ineffective get. Teitze mizeh umizeh v'chulei. She leaves both husbands and must experience all of the loss mentioned. So, why should she lose out? You notice the Gemara here is quite terse and just it leaves you to fill in the blanks. What you're supposed to ask, well, why should she lose out? What else could she have done? And the Gemara answers, as we've answered before, Iboya law lekriya legita. She should have read the document. She should have noticed the fact that a line of witnesses signing was missing, but she didn't do that, and therefore there was what for her to do. Rav Papa sovar lemevad uvda b'may havelo lemevad. Rav Papa encountered a situation of a woman who had married a second man based on the testimony of two witnesses, and the original husband came back. Rav Papa wanted to restore her to the first husband based on this claim of what else could she have done. She was an anusa. It was beyond her control. Amale Rav Huna Bre Rav Yeshua Rav Papa. V'hatanya Kol Hani Masnaisa. Rav Huna says, what about out all the sources. We got finished with all these sources we introduced with diamonds above. And in all of those sources, we have a woman which ostensibly, what was there for her to do? And we don't allow her to go back to the first husband. We said in each one of the cases, Teitzei Mizeh Umizeh. She's not allowed to go back to the first husband. Even though in all those cases, ostensibly, what else could she have done? Omalei, Rav Papa says back to Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, V'lav Shaninu, didn't we answer all of those cases? Didn't we show how all of those were not situations that were beyond her control, that there was what for her to do? So that the fact that she's asked her to go back to the first husband in all of those cases, that's because she acted with a degree of negligence. Not so in the case that I am confronted with. Omar Lay, Rav Huna Brev Yeshua says back to Rav Papa, V'ashinuye leku v'lismoch. And based on answers that we happen to give to forestall all of the questions that were raised, you think we're going to rely on our answers? Rashi on the third line under the Gemara text, the second word on that line says Omar Le Bashnu Lismo. In ze dochek umitaretz lidchois atshuva. If we through dochek is to push home a point, to force an answer, if you will. That's not an answer that we give doesn't necessarily totally dispel the question. Anan memeilo shaninon delo amrinon mai hava le lemevad. From the fact that the answers that we gave were we'll call them push off answers, we see at the end of the day that we're not going to really rely on that claim of my havalah lemevad. In other words, in all the sources, there still was a possibility to claim, well, what could she have done? And still we saw that she was forbidden to go back to the first husband. Rashi adds on the second line from the bottom, "V'nimna v'lo avaruvda." And upon hearing Rav Huna Brev Yeshua's objection, Rav Papa, in fact, did not allow the lady in his case to go back to the first husband. Now we continue with the Gemara with a new point, a new topic on the side of the Gemara. We record here Dino Shel Ravashi, which is L'kolo Lo Chayshinon. A kol is what may be loosely translated would be rumors or murmurings that the first husband is still alive. Again, a woman whose husband went abroad and she was informed that he was dead, and she married a second man. If this is done in the context of murmurings that the husband is still alive, well, we're not going to pay credence to those murmurings. That's Rav Ashi's din. However, the Gemara has to clarify what is he talking about. The Gemara, Omar Rav Ashi, Ulakola loy chayshinon. We are not going to be choshesh for murmurings. Rashi says, second line from the bottom, Ulakola loy chayshinon. If niseis bebeis in vachagal yotzakol shebalachai, ulufaneinu lo ba. If murmurings go out that the husband, after she married through a court approval, and then word went out that the first husband was still alive, but he didn't come to us, he didn't show up, so we don't take those murmurings into consideration. She would remain with the second husband. The Gemara continues, hey, Kolam, when you say rumors or murmurings we don't pay attention to, what which murmurings? Ilema, Kolo de Basar, Nisuin. If we're talking about a case like we just described, there are murmurings after she married. Omra Ravashi Chadazimna. Ravashi already told us about that. Dioma Ravashi. We're now reading at the top of Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph. Kol Kola de Basar Nisuin Lo Chashinon. Murmurings that take place after a woman married, we don't heed them. Rashi explains at the top, Kol Kola de Basar Nisuin Kagon. Kohen Shenosa Isha. A kohen married a woman, grusha, elzona, and then word went out after he married her that she was a divorcee or she was a zona, women that are ordinarily forbidden to kohanim. But it's after he married her, under thinking that everything was kosher. So murmurings that surface after marriage, we don't pay attention to that. So once Rav Ashi tells us that halacha, why does Rav Ashi have to say again over here l'kola lo chayshinan? The Gemara answers, mahu detema hoyol v'asoy lebei dina v'sharinan la. The case that Rav Ashi was dealing with was a woman who heard that her husband was dead through the testimony of one witness, and she came to the court to establish that she is now free. What we see is, since there was this need to come to the court and make sure, we see that there was this suspicion in the back of our minds that the first husband was still alive. So she went to the court and got approval to marry. Kekola dekami nisuin domi v'titzar. Maybe we should view this scenario as a murmuring before her marriage. And when the keil goes out, when murmurings start to surface even after she got married, but this was something that she entertained even before her marriage, that he might still be alive. Maybe the murmurings under these circumstances should be reason for her to be usher to the second husband. Komashmon, Rav Ashi is telling me no. Let's go over Rashi on the second line from the top. Kiva da soy lebeisin v'sharinan la. Hoyol v'hutzru cholova lebeisin lahatiro. Since she had to come to Beisdin to get permission to marry a second man, Almo bechai hava misafkinon lekoidim nisuin. Therefore, you see that there was an element of doubt that maybe he was still alive even before she married the second man. The Hilkach, Kemi Shiotzako Me'oisishodomi. Therefore, one might have thought that the murmurings that happened after she got married are like murmurings from before. And that would be reason for it to be usher to the second man. Komash Malon, this is what Rav Ashi is telling us, that even under those circumstances, we don't forbid her to remain with the second husband. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.